Welcome to the Cheltenham School Board Meeting Podcast, online at www.cheltenhamlocal.org or at www.cheltenham.fm.
Cheltenham School Podcast, Finance Committee Meeting, complete recording, October 3, 2017.
Go, approval of minutes.
Second.
Second.
Minutes are approved.
Thank you.
I had since we're going so fast, we're adding the superintendent salary to the agenda.
The cut's not going to be nearly as much as you thought.
Didn't mean it's going to be approved.
We're going to sneak that in there since we're going so fast with
this. Because there's no conversation.
All right,
here we go. Go ahead, Kevin.
All right. Okay, so the first two agenda items are in a presentation together, transportation contract and a software upgrade. As I've been kind of leading up to this, I've been reporting to the board that our transportation contract expires June 30th, 2018. Part of that was that there was a negotiation period with the district and our current incumbent contractor, which is Cheltenham Trans, and we sat down and Dr. Marseille and myself met with Eric Faust, who is the owner of Philly Trans or Cheltenham Trans, in August and September. Unfortunately, we were not able to come to a renewal agreement based upon the conversations that we were having. And after what Eric presented to us about renewing terms for the next 5 years, Dr. Marseille and I believe that our recommendation is to request the board approval to solicit proposals to go out to RFP. So what we would like to do is to request that to be approved at the legislative meeting, and that will be for a 5-year contract term. Just to give you an idea of the anticipated timeline, and for this is important in case there is a change in vendor or contractors, is that this was the same timeline when we changed from First Student into Philly Trans. So there will be plenty of time if there is a change in the incumbent on who's providing transportation services, that there will be enough transition time if we award by the February board meeting. So we along with legal will finalize the RFP by October 31st. It will be released, and I don't have solidified dates until we really get the RFP done, but the release date will be prior to the Thanksgiving break, which is November 23rd. There will be a mandatory pre-proposal meeting prior to the winter break, which is December 25th, and then we will release, obviously we'll have the RFP released. It'll be due sometime in January, and then we will award in February. So that just kind of gives you the month-by-month timeline over what the RFP process. We'll solidify the dates when we get the RFP finalized. So that's it for that.
Colin, Joe. Sure. Quick question. I know that from past experience that the number of potential bidders is probably very small in number. Mm-hmm. Do we feel confident that there are potential bidders out there?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Quick question. Contract expires June 30th. If we select a new contractor in February, it gives them, 5 months to begin to serve Cheltenham?
No, what'll happen is the current incumbent, Cheltenham Trans, will continue offering services through the end of the school year. The new contractor won't take over until the following school year. So their contract will start July 1 of 2018. So the 5-month transition will be a transition period where they would start to get all of our data.
Right, so
and
the
all
current
that.
One will cease to the end of the school year.
Yes.
Right. And then the new one will pick out the first day, August, first week of September, wherever the hell we
They'll take over July 1 because they'll have to do
some
runs.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, okay.
But to kind of follow on that transition period, then they can meet with Jim Custer and Kara and everything to
get everything
lined up so they're ready to go in July
1st. Standing locations.
All right. Other board questions? Public question?
Kara, this is
Martin Goldman.
Kara, do other districts pay a 50% premium on the buses when the schools close early?
No, not that I'm aware of, no.
So we the only ones who are doing that?
I know that
under this contract.
I know that Abington, who Shelton Trent also has, for their activity ones, they were paying that, but they negotiated that out.
Oh, they did?
Yes. But that's the only one that I'm aware of.
Okay, so we don't expect that will be in the next contract.
Correct. Okay. Yes. Good. Okay, the next piece to this is transportation software. As we were transitioning into the new contract and we're making some changes within our transportation department, adding the secretary, knowing that Jim is going to take over routing, starting with the new contract, we kind of ran up against some things with our current software. Basically, this is our current software, it's EdgeLog. We brought this on board when we did transition from First Student into Cheltenham Trans. One of the reasons that we brought this along was because we did go with the hybrid method before when we had First Student. First Student's people were actually the people that were running everything. So they owned the software, they dealt with the software. When we transitioned where we had an in-house person that was kind of overseeing the contract and involved with that, we took on the software. Since then, EdgeLog, for some reason, has decided not to update their software. It runs on what the IT people call Java, which is going out when it comes to technology and software. The other thing that happens is EdgeLog utilizes this proprietary map and numbering system. So what that means is, and you get a better understanding when I talk about the software that we're recommending. Basically what happens sometimes is when you pull up the map on where the routing is, address is not real time. So it might be off a little bit when you're looking at the map, and it doesn't really work. And like I said, it's a proprietary map that can't be changed. EdgeLog owns that map. The other thing is there's no ability for real-time bus information for staff. So what has to happen is if a secretary wants to know where a kid's bus route is, they have to go into Power School. There is a one-day delay between the talk between EdgeLog and PowerSchool. So if they had to look it up and that information wasn't updated, they wouldn't have the most accurate information. They cannot log into EdgeLog to look into that information. That information is only on Jim and now Tracy's their systems. So with the new system, TransFind, last year at PASBO, Jim, Chris Barone, the IT director, and I all attended. We went around to the trade show and the vendors to look at the different softwares. Chris asked the IT questions that he was supposed to ask. Jim asked his questions from a transportation point of view of having to take over routing and dealing with that, knowing that we were coming into a new contract year. So basically what it allows, and the biggest thing, and both IT, Tim McCleary and Chris Barone, they both demoed this again just to make sure that the transportation software is up to date. It basically allows this real-time information on the system. So with that, the maps are up to date. It's all real-time. When you pull it up, information is very clear. It also will allow for staff at the building level to log in because it is a web-based system. So it'll allow them to log in to have real-time data with where bus routes are and where children are bused. So basically the breakdown of the pricing. They're offering us a three-year hosted agreement. Last year when we were dealing with budget and we were kind of planning for this, I had anticipated that we were paying the entire contract up front in year one, so I allotted for that in our current budget. What they did for us is they broke this over a three-year deal. So years one and two include implementation cost. Implementation cost includes the training. It'll allow for staff training. It's also going to stage us for our routing for year one with all of our routes. And then after that, when you see year three, that'll be the annual cost of the software. So the annual cost of the software is going from $15,100 down to $7,450. And that's what it'll be maintaining after that. So we will experience a slight increase. But like I said, I budgeted for the entire contract in this budget. We're not going to realize that in this budget because they split it up for us to pay the implementation cost over 2 years. So our recommendation is to move forward with this contract, and if the board approves, this will be an action item under my consent agenda.
So you budgeted for this with the expectation we would approve it, I guess. Is that what I'm hearing? Yes. Okay. And then, obviously, cost beneficial. We're not going to lose money. We're going to gain money in year four. So.
And it's a better system.
Yes, and one of the things that Chris and Tim and Jim did with their due diligence is reached out to Edgelog to find out if they were planning on transitioning their system so it didn't have this Java piece to it, and there's nothing from them saying that they're looking to update. So it's not like, you know, that's not the game plan. They were updating, and it provided the same thing. Obviously, we wouldn't want to eat the implementation cost. It is a little bit cheaper. I like the $74.50 as opposed to the $15.1. The customer, the piece that I really like is this is a web-based system, so it is hosted. The security is just like our financial software because it does have student data in it. So it is hosted by the software company. If there's any issues with it, their support team has been good. We have experienced a lot of issues with Edgelog support.
And do we know other school districts that are using TransFinder?
I don't know the specific school districts, but the tally that I did or the information we collected, there aren't that many transportation systems out there. The three major ones is TransFinder, BusBoss, and Edgelog. I'm sorry, there's four, and VersaTran. Those are the four. I do know a school district that uses BusBoss, and BusBoss is horrible. Chris, Jim, and Tim all demoed those different ones, and Chris, that was the one that Chris and Tim said, absolutely not, do not bring that on board.
Mr. Rackett.
Since we are, I assume the software system for transportation and anybody we might want to go with are two totally separate entities. One doesn't affect the other.
Correct. What I believe will happen, though, is that we'll write into the RFP specs of them using our software system.
Okay.
Yes.
So, okay, so you're two independent decisions, and you don't have to really relate them.
No, right, and right now, that one of the things is Eric's company does use Edgelog. That's what they use, and we're compatible with that. He doesn't like Edgelog. He has, for his other routes and his other districts that he has, he uses a different software, which I'm not familiar with. I don't know where he got that from, but he's been trying to kind of steer us away from Edgelog into another route.
Yeah, I my only point was that, you know, you don't want to get in bed with somebody else and to find out that the new software that you just made to jump in a long-term contract with.
It'll be written in the specs.
Mr. Cullen.
Does TransFinder have the ability to go look at historical data and do analytics? For example, go and ascertain, this bus is routinely delayed by 5 minutes every day?
I believe so, yes. That piece of it, which you have to understand, this is a software piece, the GPS piece is a separate component. So I think they'll work together. There is a GPS system. It's going to be a wash when we transition GPS systems. But the thing that we like about the other GPS system is it has the ability to have apps. There's a lot more parental interaction with it as opposed to the Find My Bus that we have. So that'll be coming down the pipe. Those two are separate entities.
Okay.
So I think the GPS in connection with this will give you that information.
Thank you.
Quick question. Will the training all the school secretaries?
Yes.
Okay. Because I imagine parents would probably call in first.
Yes. Okay. They do now, and that's part of the issue.
If they got to wait a day before they can respond to that. Questions? Myron?
No, thanks.
Questions?
Thank you.
Okay. Believe it or not, yes, it is that time of the year again. Unbelievable. Yes.
I wish.
So let's talk. I always do this as a kind of refresher, talking about Act 1 and the Act 1 Index. You all know what Act 1 means is that basically there was a special legislation that required school district to seek voter approval for anything greater than the Act 1 Index. We can get exceptions from this requirement if there's rate increases are needed over to cover specific type of costs, which are debt service, PEASERS, and special education. Historically, we have never qualified for special education exceptions. There's always been a PEASER and the debt service. The Act 1 index, that's used to determine the maximum amount of tax increase we can do without exception or voter approval. So this is kind of a quick blurb just so you can see the history of what Act 1 index was starting in 2006, 2007 when it came on board and what our tax increase was in comparison to that. So obviously, if the tax increase was higher than the Act 1 index, that we went out for exceptions during that year. You'll see the black border mark, 2.4 is what PDE published the 2018-19 Act 1 index at, so, which means that without going for exceptions or voter approval, we cannot raise taxes more than 2.4% for 17-18, or 18-19, I'm sorry.
Okay. Is it possible to show this at the legislative meeting, or you'd rather not? Or
that's...
You want a short presentation?
Well, I'll go.
You just want to post it.
I'll let you know which one.
I thought you wanted a five-minute condensed version of this. No, but you just want to be able to push a couple slides.
But yes, I just think that's important to look at the, you know, comparing the Act 1 index to how much we actually increased costs, especially since 2011.
Okay, so just to give you a snapshot of the PDE budget timeline, obviously September is when they published Act 1 Index. The next big things are January, February. That's the deadlines to approve either the opt-out resolution or to adopt a preliminary budget. I'm going to go through that kind of first phase of the timeline in a minute here, but then the next big things that the board has to do is in May and June when you do the proposed final and the final budget. So just to give you next steps, kind of the two options that we have at this point for budgeting is going through the preliminary budget process. This process is really, really for if you are preparing a budget and you anticipate that your tax increase is going to be above index. There is forms and there's timelines that are a little bit different than the opt-out resolution, which we have done over the last couple years. We will need to adopt a preliminary budget by February 14th. If that is the case and we go down that path, then I'm really going to have to get first look budget to the board probably in December so that we have enough time to make sure that we publish it, get it on the website, and meet those goals to have the February 14th deadline for a prelim. And again, that would be a budget that would be presented to the board that is over the Act 1 index of 2.4. The other option is the opt-out resolution, which we have done over the last few years. Basically, the board adopts a resolution not to increase taxes higher than the index. This resolution has to be adopted no later than January 26th. It is our recommendation that we adopt the opt-out resolution at the October 10th, 2017 legislative meeting. Again, I will say that with the caveat that if that does not occur at the October 10th meeting, that we have until January 26th to do so if we want to go the route of opt-out resolution. If not, then we will need to start preparing to go through the preliminary budget process.
Bashcombe,
as I say.
Yeah, just real quick, there's just a last, our budget timeline based on our recommendation is doing the opt-out resolution, but just to kind of give you a look, if we went down the path of the opt-out resolution, this is kind of a quick snapshot of when there will be a presentation of first look, and then kind of just the timeline on when we come to the board with information about budget.
Now, Mr.
Okay, thank you. So with the opt-out resolution, 2.4%, my two questions are related. One is, rhetorically, I assume we feel very confident without obviously having talked a lot about the budget for next year. I'm not sure how far we're in the process of developing it, that we can develop a budget without meaningful cuts for no more than 2.4%, probably less, or possibly less. So that's one question. The other question tied into that is, not doubting that we cannot do that after I made that rhetorical statement, but because we've not yet talked about the budget and what it might entail, having a budget of 2.4% or less for an increase, I'm not sure I understand the benefit, or frankly, the benefit of approving this at the meeting this month versus taking our time and not doing it the last minute, but doing it, say, sometime in December or maybe even early January, just so we can get a little bit better sense of bearing and have more confidence from my perspective as a board member that, yes, we can do it for 2.4 or lower, and versus approving it next week.
And we had this, I will say this, we had a very hearty discussion at our chair meeting, and you know, from my recommendation of preparing budgets for the board with, you know, over the last few years, is I will do, like you said, we can provide information, we can show information. I think one of the big things that we had the big discussion on is, well, if I'm preparing a budget that is going to show you over a 2.4% increase, which happened last year, is that discussion going to be taken without everybody coming back and then saying, after we prepare a budget that we lay out on the table, which we have done in the past, that we feel meets the needs of the district goals, meets the needs of what is needed to move our district forward, without the board coming back and then saying, we're not going above index because of A, B, and C. And just let me finish.
Yeah.
We had this conversation because Napoleon said the same thing, that it's not fiscally prudent to kind of hand tie us and not see the information that's needed. But where I go with it is, if there is not a thought process that the board as a whole is not even going to consider going above index, then we're kind of presenting a budget that is unrealistic to the board in the first place when you're not even going to consider going above index.
Yeah, if I can follow up to start the conversation, I'll be brief. I view it somewhat differently. From my perspective alone, as one board member, my goal is to have the increase be as low as possible and ideally to be less than 2.4%, certainly not more than 2.4%. What I want to see, though, is I want to see at least at some level of proposed budget at 2.4 or less than 2.4, understand what that means, and understand if that means cuts, small cuts, big cuts, sounds like it will not include big cuts, but also then look, for example, at things like the strategic plan, other elements or things we might want to do going forward, and basically understand what that budget, which would, let's say hypothetically, would be less than 2.4% or at 2.4%, what it includes. I'm not looking for a budget, again, from my viewpoint, that is above 2.4%. I'm saying whatever you recommend, at or below 2.4%, that's what I want to see, and understand what that includes and does not include.
So, okay, so just so I can get this straight, is you want to see a first look budget then in December, is what you want to see, to make the decision
possible.
On...
I mean, that's...
Right, and that's just my perspective.
Yeah, understand completely. Let's,
can you play that out? I just want to, I'm not sure.
Hold on. Well, let's get to, and I can summarize. I mean, yep. I think
I need to translate, summarize, thank you.
Effectively, he wants a budget under 2.4%, but he wants to understand the trade-offs that happen to make
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
That was good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. You're right to the point.
But we've presented that. And the board has said, go back and sharpen your pencil.
Well, we started at a lower threshold. We did. And then we increased. And then we came back down.
Hold on, let me clear the deck real quick. Mr. Rackow.
I would just throw a couple things into that equation. One of them is that an index is obviously it's a percentage of what your existing budget is. Every time you approve a budget that is below your index, essentially what you're doing is reducing the amount that will be available to you the following year, because the amount of your budget will be lower than if you've taken the full index increase and then you took a percentage on top of that. So every time you go, instead of the 2.4, you said 2.0, that 0.4% is going to be less that you have, that you will have for the following year to consider for your budget. Would it be helpful to the board, and I've asked this before and I'll just throw it out, 2.4% is a function again of our total budget. But the real number is what we're committed to with already built-in increases which is approximately 70-75% of the budget, mm-hmm. minus other costs that we're committed to, less the amount that we're going to be getting, so that the actual amount of, if you go to full 2.4% and subtract out all of the variables, all of the things that are already locked, the increase that the administration has to work with to fund any programs that we're considering is a tiny portion of a tiny percent of whatever the 2.4% is. So would it be helpful to the board in considering going forward to know what the real numbers are, what we have actually, if we take 2.4%, I'm just going to pick a number, we now have $134,000 more than we had last year when everything nets out for new, all the new programs and initiatives and things that we want to do. Because everything else, there's already built-in increases, which we're committed to, and what is left is $134,000. So that's at the full 2.4%, and then you can subtract anything you want from that. So I'm just asking that as a rhetorical question for consideration, or if that would be helpful in making the board decision, rather than just saying, I'm not going above 2.4%, or it has to be less than 2.4%. I don't know what that means off the top of my head, because it doesn't net out to what the real dollars that the administration is going to have to sit down and say, okay, we've asked for, we want this software, we want this program, we want to build this room, we want to do this and this and this. That's going to close $500,000, and you're actually giving us a real increase of $134,000. So just throwing that out on the table.
Well,
the money amount? I mean, would be an increase of 2.7 million or a budget.
No. That's. But then you have to subtract from that all of the amounts of money that you have to pay come hell or high water. You have the teacher's contract, transportation, all of the contracts here. The actual amount that 2.4% increases your additional spending power between this year and last year. Or next year,
last year. Okay. All right. And Mr.
Englund? Yeah, because the increases that are in the contracts and whatever the state may do to us with PISAs, even though they froze it 2 years ago, it seems like it's gone up. My question was already raised by Mr. Cohen. Thank you.
Ms. Gray?
Mr. Cohen sort of answered my question. But I guess the opposite end of it is if we opt out at the next meeting, are you then saying that the budget you prepare, you want to prepare a budget of no more than a required 2.4? So what he was asking for in terms of what are we missing, what would we be missing by doing that? We would not see that. So, okay, so I guess I'm...
So the opposite side to that, I guess where philosophically I'm not sure I understand, because this happened last year, and this is the conversation we had. Yeah. So let me just play this out in our conversation, is... The events of last year happened. Yes, we presented a lower budget throughout the whole budget timeline. So events happened last year. There was a call to add additional people. We were asked to go back and see what that looked like. We came back to the board with going to index, adding the additional people with the understanding that we were continuing the budget that we had originally requested throughout the whole budget process. So that didn't change. Knowing that the trajectory of what happened at the end of last year changed that. We came to the board and asked for a 2.4 and it didn't, or a going to index.
Right.
It did not get supported. We were then told to go back, cut things out, mm-hmm. and make those decisions and get under index, which we did. So this is where I guess when I'm having the conversation with my chairs and I bring it to the board, is I do understand that we're putting you in a position to say, well, you haven't seen anything, so we don't know what we're cutting. But what I'm saying is if you're not willing to go to go above index regardless,
I have absolutely no problem putting together what I believe are the resources and the people I need to get to 2.4. And I will know that since I've been here, people are going to tell me rationale, why this, can you sharpen your pencil? And then I'm like, fine, I'll take those those resources and those positions out, and I'll drop it again. So Karen and I said, okay, with the veracity in which we're moving with the strategic plan, right, could we still accomplish our needs instead of going 150 miles an hour trying to get everything done? Maybe we can slow it down to 85 miles an hour, and then we can lower some of those costs and extend the work over a longer period of time. So at the end of the day, I was already talking to Kara, and I know the positions that I absolutely need, but I'm thinking to myself, well, that's a lot for next year. I know last year we added a heck of a lot. I know I need a couple of resources in particular buildings, and I need additional nursing staff, because our audit shows that it's significantly understaffed in terms of the number of students we had. I know I need an additional counselor at one of my elementary schools, the highest. So there are things, and I figured I'd pull back, because there's a history of that particular issue of like, well, you know, Wagner, you can't get everything you want. And I'm like, fine, then let me think prudently about how I stretch that out and be sensitive to the conversations you will have with your constituents, where how much more do you want me to pay? So then I just extend out that plan a little bit longer, knowing that we committed to certain things 2 years ago. And I told Kara, just make sure that whatever our increase is, that we're able to pay the bills for case in point contracts that we have signed that requires a particular increase in order to support that and other curricular needs.
So real quick, since we cleared the board of those first bunch of hands, again, the conversation, what it comes down to, is one of the 2.4% and trying to not go above that is one that the board generally says, it's more of a, you know, what is the limit that we can imagine passing along to the community. It's not one that accurately sits back and says, I'm certain, knowing where we are as a district and all the areas of spend, that you can do all the things that you want to do within 2.4%. It is the board saying, effectively, guidance perspective, stay at or underneath 2.4% because that's what the community can bear. And there is a role for that. It's guidance from the board to the administration. Mm-hmm. It's understandable and something that is very much debatable because from strictly a financial perspective, you're saying before you build the budget, work within these constraints. That's effectively what staying under and doing that now is, and that's kind of what Kara's proposing is, do we want to stay within those constraints to the community? If we say yes, we're saying yes because it is a make the trade-offs because the community can't handle more. If we say no, it is tell me what the district would be at 2.4, at 3.0, at 1.5, whatever it may be, and then we'll determine which district we want. But it's, do we want to provide those constraints based on, revenue collection and community grunt, or do we want to allow the budget to be built and make those kind of just programmatic trade-offs? That's largely the conversation. I will get back to the queue here.
Are you taking a straw vote, or what are you doing?
I've still got 4 or 5 people who've got their hands up. So just as we continue to talk, let's appreciate that's largely what we're discussing here.
I fully support the way Napoleon just framed it and viscerally don't like the way David framed it. Because for me,
he added the word viscerally.
I really don't think we need to go down and put Carter to the task of putting those numbers together when we're not going to improve them anyway if the community can't bear it, which it can't. So,
I agree.
So, and I was actually referring to Racco, but no, I think we.
When you assume.
Ooh, I feel very strongly that we ought to be shooting for that, knowing that we're likely to get to it, and not creating any parameter that would think about going over.
All right.
I agree. Ms. Reynolds.
So I recall what happened last year, and I know how hard you two worked your butts off to get back down to a point. And I think it's early to throw this away. I won't vote in support of anything that goes over index. I don't foresee myself doing that. I'm with David. Lower is better. But I think that what might be useful, I don't know how hard it is to pull it, but I think that a good starting point for this is like, what do we owe next year for an increase, as best as we can project it? The place I just started working, they just got their health insurance for next year. Blue Cross, 20% increase. They were told you can count on a 20% increase here forward.
We won't have our numbers till March.
Okay. We know what we're going to have to pay BEC. We know what we got to pay CEA. Although, from the way they're behaving, maybe they want to reopen the contract. We could take back the $6 million and make it 10 minutes back.
How about if I provide information that shows what our contractual increases are for next year and what that changes? Please know that we are going into BEC negotiations, so that number is not put in stone yet. I don't know what the contractual increases will be because we're going into a negotiation. Again, I did this from a point of view of going off experience and working with the board and understanding the board's view of where you stand with increasing taxes when it comes to budget. I understand Mr. Rackow's point of view that when you are building budgets, kind of doing it backwards because you're constraining, and that might mean some other things aren't happening because we're constraining it. However, in the conversation that we had, is maybe if this was a different township where the tax burden wasn't what it was, if millage was at 30, this exercise would be, or this conversation would be very different. But that's not the case. So unfortunately, we are constrained by things. One of the conversations that I did have with my chairs is, this conversation will be very different when we make the decision about EP. Because if you remember in the five-year projection and talking about debt service, when we take on $50 to $60 million more of our debt service, it's going to increase our annual debt service by $4 million. So I can't talk to you guys about index at that point. So I do understand conceptually, maybe raise it now instead of hitting harder later. That's philosophical. That's where it is. So that's why I presented it this way. Why I'm doing it in October is because, again, if we're having that philosophical conversation and as an agreement as a board, you're going to come back to us and say, okay, you guys showed us 3.1, but guess what, Dr. Marseille and Kara, the positions that you put in that are new, you're not getting those. The programs that you're looking to do that align with strategic plan, you need to put those down the road a little bit because we can't go above index. And then we're going back, and to me, not saying it's disingenuous, I'm presenting the board with a budget that I know that the board is going to say go back and change, and then we're going to cut stuff out, and some conversations might be, why didn't you present this budget to begin with? So that's kind of the rationale as I'm having of talking about the Act 1 and opt out and recommending that. But I can absolutely provide at the next meeting a snapshot of what it'll look like for the contractual increases that I know and what that number will be, and then we can revisit this. I have until January to do this. My big guidance, I think, that I need is the budget process is very different with the preliminary budget as opposed to Act 1 opt-out. We have more time to meet, to talk, to discuss, putting something together as opposed to having to go through the preliminary budget process.
But what's the... Thank you. I wasn't quite done. I thank you for your passion. What is the deadline for opting out? I mean, that's not October, is it?
No, it's January.
Okay.
So but it's really just
December. But so what I asked for, you agreed. I said those things would be helpful to see. I also hear what you're saying about we don't know what the negotiation is going to lead to, and we don't know what our health care is going to be. It's probably not going down. And I do recognize that the financing is a nightmare because we replaced 4 elementary schools. We're in the middle of this one. We got
And there's other things that, you know, maybe they're not directly related, but I'll throw them out real quickly. Number one, the referendum that's coming up on the election, it may totally make this a moot conversation. It just may totally make it a moot conversation. They put a poorly worded, tricky referendum question on that opens the door to other action next year out of Harrisburg. So that's one thing that we just don't know. I don't see how this thing loses, because they're putting out a question that says, would you like to have your property taxes cut? Well, yeah, who the hell wouldn't? It's underhanded. The second thing is the lawsuit that's proceeding to finally pin this state down to look at the formula for how they fund it. Funding it by property taxes is killing us. Most states didn't do this, won't do this. So there are two other things out there. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to push things back on you.
That's fine.
I know that you don't want to come back and say, okay, here's what 2-4 looks like. And then we come back and say, what does 1-6 look like?
It's fine.
But I think for me, for my mental foundation, knowing what some of these things are, and I can look in my bond book to see what that goes. Because I do remember that the trajectory you showed us was Act 1.
I've got Ms. Haywood and then Mr. Coleman.
So I like the opt-out resolution. I mean, I think, one, it gives you direction to basically say, yes, you can go up to 2.4, but if you can go below that, that provides some flexibility for the board to say, if we go below 2.4, and I don't feel comfortable arbitrarily telling you, can we get us to 1.5? Because I don't know what that really looks like for us as a school district. And I think that we have to be careful about, as a board, to arbitrarily throw out those numbers below 2.4 that have no meaning because of dollars associated with that and these tax increases. But the meaning is really behind what value is that in terms of the educational programming that we're trying to provide our children. And if Dr. Marseille comes back and says, I can provide what I need at 2.4, this is what it looks like. And even with that, I'm cutting this, this, and this, and I can't do this year. If I go to 2, these are the choices I have to make. I can still live with it, but you need to understand that what I thought I was going to get, even with 2.4, is not going to happen. I personally do not feel comfortable dictating to you an arbitrary percentage, because that's meaningless to me if it's not associated with meaningful programming. So I would just caution us to kind of arbitrarily throwing out numbers, but I'm totally in support of the opt-out resolution approach.
Which is something of an arbitrary number to us.
Well, it's been recommended by the administration. It's an opt-out resolution, which basically says we won't go above the index.
Right.
And I'm saying I don't need to go above the index. We can afford as a community to go above the index. But I do need to see what does it look like programmatically to go index and, you know, something else that you could live with below that. But I don't feel comfortable telling you you need to get down to 1.3 what does that look like. Because that may be decimating your school.
I generally agree with what Ms. Haywood said. Just from my perspective, I think that if we did a combination of knowing what we know, which isn't everything, obviously, in terms of increases, and using our best faith guesstimate, for lack of a better word, for things we don't control and don't know, and what that will be in terms of the budget as a baseline in terms of an increase, we know that's not going down. And then also, if there is a way to get any cuts that are recommended by the administration, and what that means, without trying to cut to the bone, but if there are things that we think pragmatically we can cut in terms of delivery of services or programs that don't make sense. And the third part, which Dr. Marseille alluded to, is having a list maybe in terms of prioritization that for these people and or this programming, without having a very long list to go in basically increments, to basically add this two nurses hypothetically or to add this new component to the strategic plan, X amount of dollars, Y amount of dollars. And then effectively we would have a baseline that would say, well, the budget would go up below 2.4, and it would be X number. And then if we want to add in other elements, then we can add them in and then arrive maybe somewhat collectively at a consensus without having a random arbitrary number, that yes, it's going to be this number, which will be above zero and less than 2.4.
So
any number, whether it's percent or an actual dollar number, is somewhat arbitrary in the minds of the EFL. But the reason I would viscerally disagree with Mr. Fishbein,
you didn't come up with a better word in all that time. You led
vehemently.
No. You don't attack apples with oranges. Is that one of the things that made our budget make sense was when we as a board, a number of years ago, asked the whoever preceded Ms. Michaels to make sure that the number we presented to the public was a real number and not a percent. Your taxes are going up X number percent means nothing to the public. You tell them that your taxes are going up $11 a week or $11 a month or $152 a year, that they can focus on, that they can understand. They may not like it, but they can understand it. So we could say 2.4, we could say 2.3, 2.1. To me, it's silly to handicap the administration by throwing out an arbitrary. We're saying you can do anything but go above. I still believe we need to know what the administration is recommending and why, and if our marching orders are not above the index, just say not above the index. And let them come back with real numbers, because minus real numbers, I have no idea what anybody's talking about. The public doesn't need to.
So I think that was the last raised hand, DS. Go for it.
Okay. I'll try to be quick.
Please. I'm in front of the chair.
What's your point?
I'd like to
own a Mercedes or maybe even a Tesla, but I'm constrained.
We can't afford it.
I'm constrained by my budget. Wow. I can only get a Sonata. So I don't think it's a bad. I'm all for the opt out, because I don't think the will of the board is to go above it. And why have the administration and Ms. Michaels do all this extra work to say, yeah, well, we're not going to approve the 3% increase, and that's what I was. I mean, even though polling made a lot of sense, what you should do your budget first and then decide. Well, that's, we just don't have time to do all that. And I think, in my experience, the will of the board, we're not going above index. So what's the point of voting on? I definitely don't think you should vote on opt out in January, because you just to throw this out, you got a new board coming in December. I don't think we should put that on the shoulders of the new board either. We should either vote on it in October or November. I'm once again all for an opt out again. I think that of nine people, I think that's the will of the board. And I think you've got to say, well, here, keep it within this, 2.0 or 2.4%. So we've got to give them, the administration, some direction. At least that's my.
Yeah, sorry to jump in, but I think we've been dancing around this for a while now. Why don't we just do a head nod or do a straw vote to say?
I agree.
Go ahead. Run your thumbs.
So what we're going to do is we're going to do a head nod or straw vote on whether we want the opt out on the October 10th legislative meeting. All right. So. Do we want to opt out next month or next week, effectively? I mean, if we don't opt out next week, we've got more time to continue on with other conversations. All right?
Can I interject real quick? I thought we had ended it with providing information to the board about the contractual obligations and what that's going to cost, not doing the opt out now because I still have time, and then going from there.
All right. When we vote for November, bring it in November is a good one.
Yeah. So that effectively is... Everyone is okay not opting out.
What about November?
We can talk about that tonight.
Bring it back. It's not a problem.
Okay. All right. Public. Before we.
Dave, you have a question?
Yeah.
Byron Goldman. Karen, would 2.4% be approximately 1.1 mils or just under $2 million?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. And do you anticipate significant savings in transportation? in the 1819. I'm not, well, no, I'm not. I
wouldn't
pin you down.
$2 million.
No, yeah, not,
$2
million.
I wouldn't
do that. But I mean, it will be worthwhile savings. All right, it would be anticipated.
Yes.
It would be a fair savings.
Yes.
And the, is the health care payment, since we're self-insured, is that based on the previous year?
It's based on enrollment. So we have to provide enrollment twice a year. And what happens is based off that those enrollment numbers, that's how we get filled on our premiums. And then at the end of the year, it's reconciled. So it's based on an annual.
So the experience for this, the experience for 17, 18 school year.
That determines our premiums?
For 18, 9, that's what I thought.
Yes.
So we would have a pretty good idea, ballpark, but a pretty good idea of what health costs are going to be for 18-19, correct? And again, within ballpark numbers, not trying to pin you down, based upon what you would anticipate, would you expect the increase in 18-19 to be large or about the same or?
I don't know. We had a
4%
1 year or 6%. We have negotiations coming up. We haven't talked about what that looks like. There might be, you know.
All right. So 2.4 is approximately $2 million in additional new money.
Yes.
There'll be some savings in transportation. Health costs will be.
What they are.
But they'll be determinable. You'll know them in
yep.
advance. Okay.
One more thing I'm going to flag.
Go for it. Go.
Okay, it's just a budget status update. Here we are. We're at about 62.4%, 25% through our fiscal year. I did add the 16-17 information. There is some flux in the variance a little bit. There's some things. We're at the beginning of the month where things haven't been fully reconciled. So I took a look at property taxes because there was a little bit of flux there. I'm waiting on the September 30th numbers for Steve Burns. That's what created the flux, I believe, in the collections for the property taxes. So there's some flux there. As you'll see, and I'm going to do a very quick state update, they did release some state money. So even though there's a stalemate with the budget, they have released our subsidies. So it's not like it was before where everything was just on lockdown and we weren't getting anything. So money has flowed through from the state, which it's a little less than what it was. I think they backed off a couple of the subsidies releasing that, but they have released about 13%. We're at about 20.6% in our expenditure line items. Again, some of those things that you're seeing flux in, that's just timing of when we have to make payments and what things have been encumbered and what things haven't. So the slide that everybody likes a little bit better because the expenditures are broken down into categories instead of the series of numbers. So again, we're pretty much on line where we were, actually a little bit under where we were last year. But again, that could be timing, the number of payrolls that were issued in the first quarter compared to what they are now, because there's 2 months where there's 3 payroll issues in the month. So again, real quick, state budget update and impact on Cheltenham. So in June, they approved a $32 billion budget bill without any agreement on how to fund it. The latest update that with the budget stalemate, there are some large payments that were postponed due to the lack of revenue flow. Standard & Poor's lowered its rating on PA debt for the second time in 3 years, and
nice.
PA is now among the bottom 5 states rated by S&P. With
well,
the
target, right?
I
with $50 million a year we're paying as a state.
Yes. So how that impacts Cheltenham when Brad Remick, and that's going to be a future meeting, probably November, December. We'll have a conversation about that.
It'll be after your call.
I want to make sure.
Proposed revenue packet from the state relies heavily on borrowing and some tax increases, one-time fund transfers, expansion on casino-style gambling. The tax increases that they're proposing does not include a tax on the Marcellus Shale, which was huge in Governor Wolf's proposal. The impact on CSD. Despite our stalemate, as I said, our state subsidies have been unaffected. word is that obviously the longer this impasse continues, the greater likelihood that they will need to stop flowing money to us. We're not sure how October subsidies will be distributed. September's came through. The state's general fund revenue is positive right now. However, there's a couple large expenditures to pay in October, so we think that's going to wipe that out, so we don't know where October subsidy payments will be. Our historical October subsidy payments are approximately $2 million. State funding accounts for approximately 21% of our overall budget, so the impact of how money flows through will be minimal due to our cash flow and our strong reserves. So that's kind of a quick snapshot on budget and the state budget.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for all you do, seriously.
Absolutely.
So moved.
Start growing that tree.
I water it every day. I try to put Miracle Grow on it. That's not working.
That's that, what's going on in Harrisburg is just party of Trump, hard at work, man. Unbelievable.
This concludes this school board recording. This recording is copyright by KD3HW and is released for free distribution under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivation 3.0 United States license. Podcast sounds courtesy of freesound.org. See the acknowledgement page of the podcast website. Thank you for downloading us and have a great day.